Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
We are going to discuss U.S. relations with North Korea in the wake of the firing of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Now, in the Trump administration, Tillerson really stood out as the most vocal proponent of direct talks with North Korea. Now that he is on his way out, who's going to be leading negotiations with Pyongyang? Rudy De Leon joins me now. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He served as Deputy Secretary of Defense under President Clinton, and during his tenure in the administration, the U.S. attempted to work with North Korea on denuclearization. Welcome, Rudy.
Thank you, and good morning, Stephanie.
If you have a question about our talks with North Korea, give us a call. Our number is 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2800. Now, Rudy, last week, Sarah Huckabee Sanders said that these talks with North Korea were being planned on, quote, a number of levels and that it's an interagency process. Who's the point person for the United States now that Tillerson has stepped out?
Well, in all of the turbulence of the last 5 days, that's probably the most important question you're asking. Who's going to do the staff work and the preparation and put the briefing book together for the president before any direct meeting with Kim Jong-un? And I think that's open. We've got a designee for Secretary of State, and there'll have to be a confirmation process in the Senate for that. It could take a bit of a time. And also there's discussion that there may be a change in the National Security Advisor at some point as well. So knowing that diplomacy is going to require a fair amount of upfront staff work, I think who's going to staff this process is the number one question open right now.
Do you think the Trump administration is going to use a different playbook for that staffing, though? I mean, they do a lot of things differently. And I was listening to some people from the Obama administration talk about the preparation they went through for talks with Iran. And is it possible to kind of throw it out and do negotiating in a new President Trump-style manner?
Well, there's definitely a different way the current administration goes about its diplomacy. And I think rather than looking at a model like the Iran talks where there were months of preparation, I think right now the hope would be that there would be a successful opening in terms of the dialogue between the two leaders, that they could at least agree to some kind of basic framework that would start a dialogue. The staff could start to work some details, and then the two leaders could get together. But that's just speculation right now.
Yeah.
On our part.
So what are our goals when we're negotiating with North Korea? Are we trying to completely take away nuclear weapons, or is there another step? And beyond that, even without their nuclear weapons, do we have any humanitarian goals, or do we want reunification with South Korea?
Well, those are all on the table and certainly would have to each be worked. And so, for example, the unification of the Korean Peninsula would be just as complicated a proposition as dealing with the North Korean nuclear weapons program. You'd have to take those in sequence one at a time, but you're right, there is linkage between the Korean Peninsula and what it would look like if there was a denuclearization. What would the South and North do in terms of accommodating each other? So, there's the economic sanctions, there's Beijing and Tokyo that have the perspectives here. But, I think at our little organization, we've agreed that diplomacy is the right way. We've had a very busy 5 days. 2 weeks ago, they were talking about a bloody nose option of some kind of use of military force. But I think opening the door after the Olympics and starting a diplomatic process, and we'll just take it one step at a time.
Great. Rudy De Leon is a fellow, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. We're talking about North Korea negotiations after Rex Tillerson. Phone number is 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. What were the talks in the 90s like? What was the goal then? They didn't have nuclear weapons yet, right?
Well, they were starting a program, but you're right, my first face-to-face on this was in Seoul in 1993. The dynamic on the Korean Peninsula is much different than the dynamic in the Middle East with Iran, in the sense that the South looks at relatives who live in the North. China looks at the North as a buffer between the West, and then the U.S. and Japan, and U.S. forces in Japan, look at the potential trajectories of some of the missile tests. So there are very different perspectives as negotiations open on the Korean Peninsula, in contrast to the P5 plus one talks that eventually came to an agreement on the curtailing the Iran nuclear program.
John in Minneapolis has a question. He's on the phone, and he wanted to talk a little bit further about China and some of the other countries. Hi, John.
Hey, I'm interested what your guest thinks about sort of the interconnectedness of China's leader taking supreme power, all of what Putin seems to be up to in the UK and certainly in the United States. Those two countries have a closer proximity to the Korean Peninsula. How does this meeting impact the relation between these sort of three powers hovering around that peninsula, not to mention Japan, who has its own internal issues now with their president? It seems that we might be at a tipping point. I mean, certainly it's obvious, but how does specifically China, who's influenced North Korea for all these years, sort of silently, we don't talk about it very often, but how does that impact our relationship with China by way sort of the Korean leader?
Thank you, John.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, in the past, we've tried a more cumbersome diplomatic process called the six-party talks, which included Tokyo, Beijing, and Moscow, as well as the U.S. and Seoul. And they didn't get much progress. But you ask an interesting question, and that is, while the U.S. and Seoul, the Republic of Korea, have been strong allies for decades, the China relationship with the Kim dynasty, if we want to call it that, in North Korea, has been more tentative. They don't enjoy the same amount of dialogue. And one of China's big concerns is a regime collapse and then tens of thousands of refugees heading for the Chinese border. But I think from the perspective of Beijing, they've said they welcome direct U.S. Pyongyang discussions. The Americans haven't wanted to take this step. Again, usually you used the presidential visit to close the negotiations rather than open. But this is a completely different case and a completely different administration in terms of how they do things. One thing for sure, the TV ratings of that first meeting will be huge.
China is worried about a regime collapse. If there was a regime collapse, wouldn't it just, I mean, forgive me, I don't know much about this, wouldn't it just lead to a reunification with South Korea? Or what would happen? What kind of regime collapse might we see?
Well, if there, remember also that above the 38th parallel, in ways that the economics of South Korea have seen tremendous economic growth, the city of Seoul now has been built almost all the way up to the 38th parallel at Panmunjom, the historic demilitarized zone. Mm-hmm. On the northern side are just thousands of conventional munitions, landmines that have been buried to retard any kind of southern incursion into the north. So it's heavily fortified, and so there's a caution in terms of anything precipitous might result in conventional forces being used against Seoul. So the dynamic on the peninsula is tentative. There have been start and stop efforts to create a permanent economic dialogue between the North and South. I know the current president, Moon, has reopened those economic talks, again, preliminary first step. And the goodwill coming out of the Olympics is maybe one of the transition points here.
Yeah, the Olympics really seem to have made a difference, or am I crazy? Is that just I was seduced by all the images of President Moon watching speed skating, and the Kim Jong-un's sister arriving and being feted by the South Koreans and covered like a celebrity? Do you think it really made a difference?
I think the Olympics calmed things down. Mm. I don't know that great strides were made, but it sort of forced all of the parties to take a step back.
One thing that is very different with this president is that he was not afraid of what he would call tough talk. He threatened North Korea with fire and fury, and he called the leader of North Korea, Rocket Man, referred to him derisively. Do you think that Trump, President Trump's, the way he writes on Twitter and speaks about North Korea made a difference and could help bring us closer to talks?
Well, I certainly would say he's had a different approach to this. And, you know, the president, there's always a fine line in terms of what is the policy of the administration. Is it the morning tweet, or is it a more substantial statement that comes out of the Pentagon or the State Department or the White House briefer? So there's definitely a different way of doing business. History will have to judge whether this actually brought all of the parties to the negotiating table. But we'll see. We've not had a president and a communication system of U.S. policy being announced very quickly, particularly last Thursday, where the South Koreans delivered the invitation, and almost instantly the White House said that they would agree to the summit. So it's a very different way from doing business.
What is it like to negotiate with North Korea?
Well, there's only been modest face-to-face discussions. We usually do have an envoy, often who works out of Geneva, the Swiss being an intermediary for us, and they would negotiate from time to time. But there really hasn't been a, you know, formal process going back to the Korean Peninsula during the war in the 1950s. So we use intermediaries. We have some expertise in the diplomatic corps, but one of our most experienced North Korean U.S. diplomats recently announced his retirement. So very limited engagement. Certainly continuing talks with Beijing about this, but the direct face-to-face have been very limited.
Is that man still going to retire? I cannot remember his name. The man has been a North Korean expert in the State Department for decades now. He announced his retirement, but I don't know if he retired or if he's out, or could he change his mind?
Well, he announced. I think if I were Secretary-designate Pompeo, that would be one of my first calls to make in terms of, can you put that on hold for a little while?
Do you think that these talks are really going to happen?
That's a good question. And I think that the first, where are they going to meet? Kim Jong-un doesn't even go to Beijing in any regular way. He's pretty much a hermit. His moves within the North are always carefully embargoed by his own security regime. So the notion that he would show up at an international summit is a big question mark. Perhaps the 38th parallel, there's a facility right there in the DMZ where some talks go on. But where the North Koreans would show up would be one of the key questions. Would they come to the West? Would they go to the DMZ? I think we would want to be cautious about the president not starting these talks in Pyongyang. But that's an excellent question. Where, you know, just as we talked about who would staff this process, where the leaders meet is a very open question right now.
Are the North Koreans, what do they think of Mike Pompeo as Secretary of State? He's been very hawkish, as I said earlier, and he's not, you know, Tillerson wanted to talk with him, but Pompeo's, you know, like, are they going to pull back?
I don't think that we'll see that on the part, you know, the invitation has been made, and the United States has responded to say that it would engage in the meeting. So I think that's as sure as a thing can be right now with the Trump administration. Anything can change by the next day. I think, you know, Secretary Pompeo is likely to be more engaged with the senior diplomatic corps of the U.S. He's likely to put some wind in their sail in terms of engaging them and using the resources of the career diplomats at the State Department, for example. But I think the Senate confirmation hearings will bring all of these questions forward. And we'll see how the confirmation schedule links up with the potential schedule for a meeting, sometime before June.
What went wrong with the conversations in the 90s and the negotiations in the 90s?
I think that, to be honest, the North did not live up to its commitments. At that time, in diplomacy, you use carrots and sticks. Mm-hmm. And the carrots were humanitarian assistance, medical assistance, coming in through different auspices in return for UN inspection regimes on some of the nuclear facilities. But at the end of the day, the food and medicine made their way to the DPRK military and not to the rank and file. And the story of North Korean society is a very tragic one. There's a view of thought that the North Koreans keep their population on a 1,500 calorie a day diet, so that enough to show up to work, but not enough to really push back against the government.
Why is this always the United States and South Korea taking the lead on this? I know there have been six-party talks, but it seems, is that just from our impression here in the United States that we should be the one negotiating all these peace treaties? Why is it us that is always taking the forefront?
Well, I think the U.S., through its commitment to South Korea since, 1951, it's been a success story globally in terms of the Republic of Korea's economic development, in terms of its building its own security capabilities. I think there are places in the world where American diplomacy can create venues for discussion in ways that others can't. We've seen some of that authority dissipated, particularly after Iraq in 2003 and all of the turbulence in the Middle East. But American diplomacy still is the best hope for some kind peaceful resolution, or at least diplomatic resolution, of the crisis on the peninsula.
One of our callers wanted to know if we are at our best relations with North Korea at this point than ever before.
Well, in the 90s, Billy Graham made a controversial visit with his religious crusades into the North. Kim Il-sung, the founding father, hosted him, so that was probably a plus point. I'd say, as we noted a minute ago, the Olympics has given sort of fresh impetus to a diplomatic approach.
Thank you so much for joining us, Rudy.
You're welcome.
Rudy De Leon is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and a former member of the Clinton administration. He joined us from Washington, D.C.